It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we talk with a Wisconsin representative who says that despite the gridlock, there are still ways to work across the aisle in Congress.
First, data from the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development shows 2015 had the highest number of layoff notices during Governor Scott Walker's time in office. Milwaukee was the hardest hit region for these layoffs, which topped 10,000 for the state as a whole.
Steve Deller is with us now to break down that data and explain what it means for Wisconsin. He's a professor of agricultural and applied economics at UW-Madison. Steve, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, do we know why there were so many, upwards of 10,000 layoffs in 2015?
I think it's part of the ebb and flow of the economy. I think it's just kind of a lining up of a number of larger manufacturing firms that are just deciding to shut down operations here.
And which workers got hit the hardest on this?
I think that a lot of it is, in this particular go-around, is food processing. We have a lot of food processing plants that have been essentially bought up by large national corporations, and those large national corporations are just kind of, looking at them like a piece on a chessboard, and they're just deciding that these particular facilities are not competitive anymore, and they're shutting them down.
Now let's take a look at that number. So it's a bit more than 10,000 layoff notices in 2015. Is that number a reason for concern?
No, I don't think it is. It's all, the economy has these natural ups and downs. It's like watching the stock market. If you look at the stock market every day, you're going to drive yourself crazy because there's just these natural kind of fluctuations. I think what we want to do is look at more of a long-term trend. I think if we're having the same conversation, say, in the summertime, then I think there's serious cause for concern.
Why? If we get to the summertime, things are still looking like that, then we're looking at something that's not just a blip. It could be here to stay.
Exactly, yes.
Well, how do other Midwestern states compare with this number?
Well, actually, the other Midwestern states are doing better than Wisconsin. I think part of it is kind of the makeup of our economy. The Wisconsin economy is fairly heavily dependent upon manufacturing. A lot of that's food processing. And there's just not a whole lot of growth in terms of jobs related to that. I also think that other states have taken a bit more of a different view of economic development policy. Wisconsin is still kind of in this old way of thinking that you can create a positive business climate by cutting taxes and cutting regulations and making government smaller. And that may have been true 50 years ago, but it's not true today. And I think our neighboring states have kind of realized that, and they're looking at more progressive. I don't mean progressive in a political sense, but progressive in terms of thinking outside of the box and looking forward as opposed to looking backwards.
All right. Well, tell us what some of the other states near us are doing that's different than Wisconsin. You categorize that as an old way of thinking. What is the new way?
I think there's shifting more towards small business development. I think that they're looking at putting more energy and resources into those businesses that have 5 to 10 employees and trying to nurture those businesses. We see that in Madison. Madison kind of has embraced this small business entrepreneurial climate. And the rest of the state has really not embraced that to the extent that other states have. And when you look at the job growth that is occurring in Wisconsin, a lot of it's coming out of Dane County in the Madison area. And I think it's because they've embraced that entrepreneurial kind of view of the world.
How is that distinct from what the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation is trying to do?
Well, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation basically has the tools that the state legislature and the governor's office has given them. They can only do what the law allows them to do. And as such, they kind of have one hand tied behind their back because they're kind of limited to these old school ways of thinking about things. They're looking at tax incentives and recruitment and trying to really kind of focus on larger existing businesses. And that's not where the job growth is. The job growth is in these newer startups, these smaller businesses. So a lot of it is really trying to help state and local decision makers better understand that the future of the economy is not old, large-scale manufacturing, but rather smaller-scale, upstart new businesses.
We're talking to UW-Madison's Steve Deller right now. He's a professor of agricultural and applied economics, joining us to talk about data showing that 2015 is the year with the highest number of layoffs during Governor Scott Walker's administration. And speaking of the governor, he said that more people are working now than at any point in the last 20 years. He says, in essence, that things are looking up. Is he right?
Well, it's a relative statement. If you look at where Wisconsin was right before the Great Recession hit, we are just now back to that point. And when you look at, well, the highest level of employment was right before we went into the Great Recession, and we're right back to that now, then, well, yeah, technically that's correct. But neighboring states in the U.S., they're beyond that. They have caught up. They have replaced all the jobs that were lost during the Great Recession, and they've added more. Wisconsin is just now catching up to where it was.
And beyond fostering those smaller businesses, what else could Wisconsin, do you think, be doing?
Well, I think that we have to really rethink our policies around taxes and investments. I think that the level of cuts to public education, that's the UW system, that's the technical schools, that's K-12 education, I think we need to really relook at that. I think we need to kind of, rather than looking at it as a cost to the taxpayer and a cost is bad, we should be looking at it as an investment. One of the things that really surprises me is the real drop-off in the number of people that are migrating into Wisconsin. There is some evidence that people are kind of having a second guess or second thoughts about moving to Wisconsin because of the disinvestment in things like education and the transportation system. People are not sure they want to move here.
And you're seeing that, you're saying, in contrast to the states around us, other Midwestern states. So are you seeing similar patterns of migration in those states, or is this something where Wisconsin is standing out?
I think that it is, again, we're just kind of lagging behind. We're just kind of, the other states are making more progress in terms of growth, and we're just kind of falling behind slowly but surely. We're not declining, but we're not really growing at the same rate as the rest of the country and the rest of the Midwest.
Now, in the last year or so, there has been this conversation politically about whether the jobs outlook was good in Wisconsin, whether Governor Walker had met his pledge to add enough jobs. But at the end of the day, is the governor to blame for this?
The governor sets the tone of the discussion. The governor kind of can use the bully pulpit to kind of say, what is the future? What are we doing as a state? And as I say, what we've embraced, or what the governor has embraced, is this kind of old school way of thinking. Cut taxes, cut spending, cut regulations, cut, cut, cut. And that's setting a tone. Whereas the other states, our neighboring states, are really looking more at, we need to invest. And yes, we're willing to actually tax ourselves to invest in better roads, to invest in better schools, and invest in people. And that tone really kind of sets the stage. And that's why I think the other states are a little bit more progressive. Again, I don't mean it in a political sense, but progressive in terms of their outlook on what policy should be.
Now, legislators and others are looking at revamping the state's Economic Development Corporation. Would you like to see the corporation include things like you're talking about, including fostering smaller businesses?
I think that the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, really, their kind of comparative advantage, if you will, is kind of working with the bigger companies. They have the horsepower to do that. They have the resources to do that. But they can help facilitate working with local communities on small business development and entrepreneurship. So I'd like to see, I don't think that the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation should go 180 and flip the other direction. I think there needs to be a better balance. And I think that, again, it's a bully pulpit, if you will, is that if the state lead agency is kind of embracing entrepreneurship and small business development, then that will filter down to local communities where the rubber really meets the road.
So as far as these numbers, it sounds like it's wait and see.
Unfortunately, yes. I think it's just it's a slow drip of negative news. And I think that that drip is kind of picked up a little bit. Now, the question is whether or not it's going to continue to be a faster drip or if it's going to slow back down a little bit.
Steve, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Steve Deller, professor of agricultural and applied economics at UW-Madison. He joined us to talk about data showing 2015 to be the year with the highest number of layoffs during Governor Scott Walker's administration.
The 114th Congress is officially the most hated in U.S. history, marked by entrenched partisanship and gridlock. Our next guest is serving his second term for Wisconsin in the House of Representatives. He says, yes, the dysfunction in Congress is bad, but there are ways to pass legislation and get things done.
Democrat Mark Pocan joins us now. He represents Wisconsin's 2nd District. Representative Pocan, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Well, the 114th Congress, the current Congress, is now officially the most hated in U.S. history. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I think, you know, people in real lives totally don't function like Congress. You know, we don't just fight for the sake of fighting sometimes. We don't never get anything done. We don't, you know, pay our bills like a family does. We don't really do a lot of things the way they're supposed to happen, the whole how a bill becomes a law. And I think people are just reaching that absolute frustration point of if they can't get their acts together, then, you know, we need to start changing the people who are in Congress. And I think that's why, you know, zombies and cockroaches and traffic jams all rank better than Congress in polls, and we need to do something about that.
What do you think it is that distinguishes this Congress, in this case in a negative way, from other Congresses in the past that were also gridlocked or had a negative perception in the public?
Well, I think we're in about the third Congress in a row where this inactivity is becoming the new normal. And, you know, the fact that we don't do the normal appropriations process, the various budget bills, for example, the way we're supposed to, and then instead, in 48 hours, we pass an omnibus bill that's a year's worth of work that has very little, if any, oversight. And, you know, I think people are just kind of reaching that frustration point of, you know, you can make a mistake once, maybe twice, but when that becomes the new normal, that's not at all normal. And I think people just really get turned off by that. And then, you know, watching the inaction from the Tea Party, not allowing anything to move, kicking out a speaker who did nothing wrong. I mean, all these things are signs of real trouble.
Now, is it fair to lay all this blame and dislike at the feet of this Congress, or is it also the culture changing around this political body?
You know, I'll tell you, a lot of it, quite honestly, falls at the feet of Congress. The fact that, you know, 40 or 50 people hold everything up, and Congress lives by a rule that's named after a former speaker, Denny Hastert, that they have to get a majority of votes from their caucus, which makes it impossible when 40 or 50 people say no, knowing that that speaker, former speaker Hastert, just was went to prison, and they've taken his portrait down, you think it would be a good time to take the rule away. Because there are a lot of things that, if they got put on the floor of Congress, they would pass with a bipartisan vote, things like immigration reform, minimum wage increase, et cetera. And because we know that there are enough people signed up on the bill or have made public statements back home that they support it. But because we abide by this sort of strange process that, again, doesn't exist in the real world, I think people get really tired of seeing nothing happen when they know things need to happen.
Well, short of that, I mean, you've said that it's still possible to move legislation through. What works? What techniques have you found?
I'll tell you, what's the most difficult is just, you know, trying to realize that people see things back home. You'd think there's 20 or 25 members of Congress on the nightly news, and they all hate each other. And, you know, that seems to be the message that gets out. I think that might also feed into some of this reputation of Congress. But I think if you really, you know, talk to people and get to know people, like I've done the whole time I was in the legislature and now my second term in Congress, you know, people like Reed Ribble from northeastern Wisconsin is a very reasonable person. And while we may disagree on some policy perspectives, we can sit down, have a real conversation, and find out what we have in common. And these are Reed's words, you know, compromise isn't compromising your principles or values. It's just finding out what you have in common and moving those things forward. And once you do that, surprisingly, or not so surprisingly to real people, you start to find out what else you might have in common or how you can get other things done. So, you know, I was able to do that this year with the Perkins Loan Program. It was about to expire, and it did expire, but we were able to put a bill out on the House floor and got unanimous support. And then we had a little bit of a hiccup in the Senate, but thanks to Senator Tammy Baldwin, we got that passed. And now that program is extended, which is very important for a lot of lower-income students getting loans going to college. But we've tried to do it in some other areas. The biggest problem we still face is for something to get to the floor of Congress, it's put there by the Speaker. And if they live by these weird rules, like I was mentioning, the Hastert rule, where they don't just put it on there unless they have the majority of votes from their own House, then those things will never get there for us all to vote on. And that's been kind of the double-edged sword. You know, you can find things you can find that you have in common with others, but then you have to go through this process to get them to get done. So it becomes very complicated.
We're talking right now with U.S. Representative Mark Pocan, talking about what he says it takes to get things done right now in the 114th Congress. And Representative Pocan, the political landscape in Wisconsin is, as you know, it's very polarized right now. But is there anything about Wisconsin politics, past or present, that you want to carry with you to Washington?
Well, you know, I think when you look at prior to the last, maybe, again, 5 years, Wisconsin did a lot of things right. I mean, I spent 14 years in the legislature. Before that, I was in local government. I think we had a tendency to work with each other, even those we disagreed with. And, in fact, recently Chuck Todd was just in from Meet the Press for WisPolitics' 15th anniversary and made a comment about how unique Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa are, how we still treat public service with something that we respect as opposed to some other parts of the country. And I think if we take those values, again, of trying to find out what you have in common rather than what you don't have in common, it really does advance us in a better way. And I think it's one of the reasons why people like Reed Ribble, again, and I have become friends, put a couple budget measures forward. If we can have more of that happen, think of pre-5 years ago Wisconsin, we really did things, I think, in a smart way. But when you know, when I was in the legislature, I think 2 of my 14 years had Democrats in control, 2 had Republicans in control, and the rest of the time was split legislatures. So you kind of had to learn to do that. I think we need to get back to those sort of values, and we'll have a much, much more successful way of getting federal laws passed.
Now, a lot of the things that you mentioned, having some bipartisan partners on, it was true that you had that bipartisanship on that, but it wasn't typically the issues that we think of as both sides digging their heels in on. It wasn't immigration reform. It wasn't guns. It wasn't health care. How does Congress work together on issues like those?
Well, that's why, again, you have to find out what you've got in common first and then just move those things forward. Right now, we don't move anything forward. I think when I go back this week, we are going to be voting to repeal the Affordable Care Act for, I don't know if it's the 63rd, 64th time. That doesn't serve anyone's purpose. But if we actually got some of the things that we agree on, like earlier this year we did pass the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, very important. It also was previously known as No Child Left Behind. But we did it better and smarter, and it got strong bipartisan support. Focus on what you have in common, and then those other things you're going to be able to get done a little bit easier. We need to do more of that instead of the divisiveness of let's just vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act again. When you get into like the 60s of voting on something, we kind of get the idea, but maybe we should move forward on other things.
And do you think there's any hope for this model of finding common ground and working from there as we go forward in a fresh year, 2016?
Well, anyone who's above about fourth grade knows that, you know, it's always better to work and get along with people than not get along with people. And this Congress, you know, while we have Republican control of the Senate and the House, we have Democratic control of the White House. So the common sense fourth grade vision is you have to work together. My hope is that we can have more of that fourth grade vision happen in Congress instead of the petty infighting that we've had. Because if we kind of realize that, you know, most of the time we're going to spend in divided government, we need to be able to take those skills forward and figure out, again, the things that we can get done rather than focusing on the things that we can't necessarily get done right off the bat.
And looking ahead to 2016, are there areas, bills, that you are hopeful about seeing this kind of cooperation?
One area that I'm hopeful, very hopeful on, because there's some strong support on both sides of the aisle, is criminal justice reform. You know, there was a period in the 80s where it was get tough on crime, get tough on crime. And then we forgot about being smart about crime. And you know, now as a per capita, I think we incarcerate more people than any other country in the world, which is a disgusting statistic for us to have. And the fact that now I think people are starting to realize that we're not serving people the best when you simply incarcerate them, that we need to put more money into things like prevention and early intervention for mental health. That's probably 20-25% of the prison population right there. If we do things smarter around crime, we will give people more opportunities to have good quality lives, and we're going to save us a lot of money along the way. And if we can find what we have in common in those areas, there's a number of bills that have been introduced in this Congress. That would be a really positive area to move forward, and I think really have major ramifications on real people's lives.
Representative Pocan, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Mark Pocan represents Wisconsin's 2nd District in Congress.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farron.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. The new year is underway, and in case you need some ideas or motivations for resolutions, look no further than social media.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and more sites and apps continue to be a huge part of our lives. That's not probably going to change in 2016. So according to our next guest, rather than complaining about it, resisting it, we should look to our networks to help us with our goals.
Joining us now is Shelby LaDuke, a consumer advocate reporter for the Green Bay Press-Gazette. She recently wrote a column called Social Media Resolutions for a Better 2016. Shelby, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
So a lot of people get irritated with the stuff that they see on social media, even their, friends, whether they're friends in quotes or real friends. People can be annoying on social media. So what's the case for using social media as a tool for the good?
Right. So, and one of my New Year's resolutions is that I wanted to become a bit more tolerant of people and have a little bit more patience, which is a quality that I think is very rare these days. So I'm kind of looking at that, and, social media is very included in that. And, taking people's little quirks or tendencies that would usually make you hit that unfollow or delete friend button and kind of turning into something to fuel your own resolution. So, for instance, I can name a few people on my friends list that constantly post about all of their workout regimens. And so instead of, feeling negative about that, why not keep them as your friend? And, every time you see those annoying posts, it'll just, prompt you to do 10 push-ups or crunches, and maybe you can go ahead and lose a little weight yourself.
And yeah, that's what a lot of your article is about, is taking the things, kind of almost like a judo of social media, taking the force of the thing that used to annoy you and trying to figure out, hey, how can I motivate this in a positive direction?
Right, exactly. And, it comes into other aspects of your life, too. When people talk about their New Year's resolutions, they say, I want to eat healthier. And so I feel like one of the things that I constantly see on my news feed are all these really, naughty, tempting food videos. Well, if a healthier diet is something that you want to do, every single time you see one of those tempting videos, maybe look up online a healthier alternative to that. And then, you can get more of that variety in your diet to keep you stay motivated with that diet that you're working on.
So the thing is, you have to be using social media for this to work. You can't be on blackout. Otherwise, you're not going to get to those healthy recipes. So you're saying you're scrolling through your media feed, your Facebook page there, the news, and you see that picture of tasty food, and you go and look up something, quinoa or something, and you eat that instead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I think that, talking about the mistakes that people make with their diet is not having enough of that variety. So, having more and more recipes for yourself, you can, kind of create your own little social media diet recipe book, if you will.
Before we get to some of your more specific suggestions, it sounds like you're asking us to kind of rethink our relationship with social media, because I'll speak for myself. I've fallen into habits. I'll sit down on my computer at home, flip open Facebook, go through it, see what's out there. There's some cool stuff. There's annoying stuff. But I'm not thinking about it. It's just like a habit. Sometimes it's annoying. Sometimes it's time waste. Sometimes it's fun, too. So we need to just not take the way we look at social media for granted anymore, it sounds like you're saying.
Right. And I think that, speaking of resolutions, it's all about kind of changing yourself and maybe the way you think or the way you act. And so kind of being more aware of the things that you are exposing yourself to with maybe having multiple profiles, I think can definitely change the way that you behave and the way you think and act in your daily life.
Well, let's dig into those suggestions a bit right now. Your first one touches on common resolutions. You talked about this a little bit already, and was exercise. So people do get into their New Year's resolutions. They may post, you know, bikini pics or whatever as they go along in their diet. I don't know. But you're saying you can use that for the good. So what specifically should we do when we do, when we see that?
Yeah, you know, I constantly tell my friends, I'm like, you know, when I'm posted up on the couch with my pizza, you know, watching Netflix, the last thing I want to see is somebody doing the Stairmaster, you know, on Instagram. But, you know, every single time you do see that little annoying, you know, constant reminder that, hey, I'm in better shape than you are, it'll just kind of be your reminder to yourself, you know what, I'm at home not doing anything right now. Why don't I go ahead and do those 10 push-ups or crunches or whatever exercise that you might like that will help you make you feel better about yourself. And surely if you have a lot of friends who are doing the exercise thing as their New Year's resolution too, you're going to see a ton of those posts January 1st and after, so you're golden.
I've got one of those. There's somebody on Facebook who posted, oh, just triathlon, whatever. I'm not even sure who this person is. I think I accidentally...
Sorry, I should stop doing that.
Yeah, right.
Sorry,
yeah.
Rob.
Well, I mean, yeah, just take care of yourself. You can't, triathlons every day, Veronica?
No, you know.
Yeah.
I try to stay healthy.
But yeah, okay, that sounds like a good tactic to deal with it. We're talking to Shelby LeDuc. She's with the Green Bay Press Gazette. She wrote a column titled Social Media Resolutions for Better 2016. You can join in, by the way. Do you want to rethink the way you relate to social media? Do you feel like you get hooked on it? Are there things that annoy you that people do that maybe you could use a little advice on how to reframe, use it in a positive way? You can call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page and tell us about your, you know, your workout regimen. Post some tempting dessert photos while you're there.
And Shelby, let's talk money now. A lot of us want to be frugal with money, especially after the holidays when we may have spent a lot of it. So what are some ways that we can use social media to help us do that?
You know, and being a consumer advocate, I feel like this is definitely right up my alley. You know, I've recently realized that I couldn't really afford the holidays, if you will, with all those bills coming in. And looking through my newsfeed, I do have a couple of friends who, despite not having much money, they constantly post about all of their big purchases online. They'll, you know, post pretty pictures, excited statuses, and, you know, as much as you try to help them with their finances and say, hey, maybe you should save, you know, they might not ever change. And so maybe you can kind of use this as fuel to save money yourself. So every time you see that that bragging post about, you know, a new phone or a new clothes, if you will, go ahead and put a dollar into a social media money jar. And like I said, you yourself might have enough money to afford those things that you may not have been able to afford last year.
You know, mentioning that you are a consumer advocacy writer,
yeah.
I guess you're telling us to use social media to think of ourselves as consumers, active consumers, not just a passive audience to what we're seeing out there.
Right. And I think with social media, everyone is essentially kind of a consumer advocate these days. I constantly go on there on people's timelines asking about the best phone or best car. And when you kind of provide that feedback to your friends, sort of giving your opinion, you are that consumer advocate. So having that mentality that you can maybe use these posts to save money yourself is kind of a win-win.
Is it also important to realize that we are consuming things? We're hearing about products and we're being thought of as consumers, even if we're just on there for entertainment.
Well, I think that that is a good point, too. And I think that anybody who is constantly on Facebook, especially on a desktop computer, you look at the side of all the ads that are popping up, and it knows exactly what you're searching for. And so maybe to kind of be aware of your personal finances, and like I said, just use those posts to remind yourself, hey, I saw this today. I need to go ahead and put some money in that jar.
Yeah, so, I mean... We have a jar by the computer, and what, we have to make sure we have to have a pocket full of nickels or something like that? So we have a nickel in there every time we see that?
Well, and it sounds so so stereotypical, or typical, but any little cent counts in that. So, I mean, if you have people to constantly throw change away or just kind of ignore it, so to even just put that extra change in that jar every time you see those annoying Facebook posts or, you know, tweets, if you will, put them in that jar, and before you know it, you'll have a ton of money.
So you're not telling us to stay off social media in 2016. You want us to use it, but isn't there a case to be made that we might just be happier if we weren't on it so much? Then maybe we'd go to the gym. Maybe we would, you know, organize our house and things like that if we weren't wasting time on social media.
Right, and I think that it's all about how you look at it and you use it yourself. Right now, I'm only 24, but I'm kind of reaching that age where all of my friends are graduating school and they're getting engaged and, you know, starting families. So right now, for me at least, I feel like most of what I'm seeing is very positive stuff. So it's all about who you surround yourself with, and usually people like to take to Facebook or Twitter to kind of do subtle hints and reminders to people, oh, hey, you know, I just got engaged yesterday, or I just accepted my dream job offer. And I think that those are the things that we need to kind of remind ourselves that that's what social media is really for, you know.
Let's bring on a caller. We've got Mike on the line in West Dallas at 800-642-1234. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to make a comment that although I'm sure that there are parts of what your guest is describing that could be beneficial to someone who's attempting to achieve some kind of discipline, that what Veronica's comment was really kind of right on point, right as I was listening in between your screener and now, that as to what my comment is that the engaging in personal media, social media, sharing by itself, just the act of it, it seems to me to be the lack of personal self-discipline, which is exactly what your guest is kind of advocating, that if you see this, be reminded of this, and then go in a different direction, which would be the same thing that kind of any teacher or philosopher might be about a personal life, about a life that's led with some kind of discipline, goal in mind, and then some application of discipline toward the goal.
Interesting, Mike. Thanks for the call. So could we do this on more of a meta level, maybe, Shelby? Try to have a trigger that lets us know when we've spent too much time either reading or posting on social media?
You know, I kind of use this as a rule of thumb. If I've been scrolling through my news feed and all of a sudden I came up on something that I saw this morning, maybe it's time to put down the phone or log off on there and maybe do something else. You know, with every single profile that you have on social media comes that responsibility to still get the things done in your life that need to be. But once again, I think that as long as what you're sharing is, you know, appropriate, if you will, you know, however you determine that, or is positive in your life, I don't think that anyone should discourage you from sharing those fun things about your life on online or the internet.
We're talking to Green Bay Press Gazette consumer advocate reporter Shelby DeLuke right now, talking about some social media resolutions for the coming year.
We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do the things you see on social media help motivate you or demotivate you? Do you have any resolutions for your social media habits this year? Do you think you use any of the tips we've heard so far from Shelby that she suggested for exercise, saving money? Can you think of other ways to use social media to help you reach your goals? And what bugs you? What are the annoying things you see on social media that you could use some advice on dealing with? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or comment on our social media, the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our discussion now about social media resolutions for a better new year with Shelby LeDuc from the Green Bay Press Gazette. And we want to hear from you.
Do you have any resolutions for the way you use social media in this new year? Do you think you'll use some of the tips we've heard so far from Shelby? Can you think of other ways to use social media? And are there negative things you encounter in social media that you'd like some advice from Shelby on a way to turn them into a positive for your own life? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go to our callers right now. We've got Sarah on the line in Caledonia. Sarah, hi.
Yeah, hi.
What did you want to take away from this?
Well, so my question was, I've been with my boyfriend for about 3 years, and he doesn't want me at all on his, Facebook, because we fight a lot. And, I was wondering, when I see people posting pictures of them being engaged or pictures of them and their spouses all happy, I get really down about it, and I was wondering how I can ignore it and not let it get to me so bad.
Okay, that's a good question. It does. There are some studies out there I've seen. I'm sure there are all kinds of studies, but some saying that social media can bring you down when you see other people's, you know, glossy, happy lives on Facebook. So how do you deal with that, Shelby?
Okay, well, actually, I'm really glad that someone asked this question because I wrote a column about this not too long ago. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, somebody that you're with shouldn't have an issue with you being on their Facebook, being tagged in photos and statuses, as long as it's, you know, like not repetitive. So, you know, don't be discouraged that, you know, he's maybe not comfortable in tagging you in those sort of things. But also know, too, that maybe you guys are just that couple that don't need to constantly take photos everywhere you go. And maybe you live in the moment as more these people need to constantly document their relationship for everyone else to see. It's kind of that validation. When it comes to engagement and stuff, that stuff is a bit more serious. So I can kind of see why people are very excited to post that sort of thing. So certainly when you get to that point in your relationship, if it does turn out that way, I think that having some sort of engagement announcement online is appropriate.
Sarah, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. To that wider issue, though, Shelby, of, you know, if you're out of work and somebody got a new job and they post it, or if you're not in a relationship and they're posting the Valentine's Day photos, is there a way to, you know, not to let that bring you down, seeing that other people are doing happy things that you're not right now?
You know, I think it's important to remember everything that is good about your life. So, you know, when you're scrolling through your newsfeed or your timeline, and you just constantly see all these reminders that people are moving on in their life and they're taking these huge steps, and maybe you're kind of stuck in a rut, to maybe just sit there and jot down 3 to 5 things that you are really happy about in your life that maybe other people might be envious of you for.
Okay, so have you started doing this, Shelby?
You know, I have. I kind of started out writing this column as sort of an experiment, and the more that I'm going through and analyzing what my friends post, I'm finding myself, you know, reminding myself to do these certain things, whether it be the diet, the exercise, but especially with the good vibes. It's New Year's, it's engagement season. I can think of maybe 12 people on my friends list that got engaged. So it was a constant reminder that these people are, you know, taking these big, happy steps in their life, but I still have many wonderful things going on in my life as well. And that's important to remember, to keep your morale up, especially when it's cold outside.
Talking to Shelby LeDuc from the Green Bay Press-Gazette about ways to use social media in a positive way, help us do those New Year's resolution kind of things in 2016. Still time for you to join in with your social media wants and dislikes at, what's our number? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Shelby, we're just talking about, you know, what to do when we're annoyed by the positive things from other people. You also write about, and this is something I encounter on social media, comment sections, on articles, on newspapers, things like that, relentless negativity on the internet. And you have some advice on not letting that bring us down.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes with what I was just talking about, but, you know, let's say you're on your favorite celebrity's, you know, Facebook account, and you see people, you know, making negative comments about them. I think it's important to not feed the trolls, if you will. That's kind of a famous saying here. Just don't engage with those people that are constantly negative. You know, if you make a comment and someone, you know, consistently replies on it and just tries to make you feel bad about yourself, the best thing that you can do is just ignore it. You don't need to engage people like that, especially if one of your New Year's resolutions is to become a more positive person.
What about people who use social media? We're talking about this from the consumer's perspective, the user, but what about, you know, if we want to use it responsibly and think about the happiness of other people, what can we do when we're posting?
I think that, you know, let's say you have a whole bunch of friends that, like I said, are posting all of these wonderful things about their life, whether, you know, they're getting engaged, married, having a family. I think it's important that you reach out personally and just, you know, congratulate them on things that are going on in their life. I think that acknowledging someone else's happiness it not only looks good on your part, but, it, you know, is good karma. Maybe something good will come your way as well in the near future.
Juan called in, couldn't stay on the line. Juan says, don't focus on those highlight reels that people post on social media. It's the everyday stuff that matters. And that's advice maybe for posting. And don't just post that highlight thing. But then
on the other side,
the other hand, like, hey, great lunch today. Here's the sandwich I ate and a picture and a video of me eating the sandwich. So where do you draw that line between, you know, keeping that everyday in there but not too everyday?
I am so happy someone brought this up. You know, like those big events in your life are wonderful, but I do tend to notice that those little things that happen throughout the day tend to be the ones that get the most likes and the most interactions. I can think of one of my friends, Sydney. She posted about tripping up the stairs after just purchasing one of her most expensive favorite coffee drinks and spilled it all over herself. And that was one that got like 70 likes throughout the day. And it's like, really? Normally, if you think about life before social media, that's not something that you would go out and broadcast to all of your friends in person, like, hey, guess what I did today? But because you put it up there for everyone to see, it's like, oh, she's funny. You know, like, let's engage with her on this. So it is those little things in your life.
All right, let's take a caller now. Janet joins us from Madison. Janet, hi.
Hi. I'm just kind of backing up from a caller or so ago that was feeling down about reading about other people's, I don't know, successes and whatever. And I have a quote to share, and then just if your guest could comment on it. It says, the reason why we struggle with insecurity is because we compare our behind the scenes with everyone else's highlight reel.
Hmm. That's interesting, Janet. Thanks so much. Shelby, that backs up what our commenter said earlier. What do you think?
I think that it's important to self-analyze. You know, like let's say someone's having a great day at their job. Well, their job might be very different from yours. Or, you know, a lot of people like to put out all the positive things going on in their life when really there might be a lot of negative things that you don't know about. You really can't judge a book by its cover, if you will, especially on Facebook. You have to realize that your life is your own and you have to lead it. And you can't always lead by the examples that your friends put out there because they may not be 100% the truth.
Well, Shelby, it's been fun to talk about. Thanks so much for joining us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
That was Shelby LaDuke, reporter for the Green Bay Press-Gazette, sharing her ideas with us for social media resolutions for a better 2016.
I've been informed by Veronica that today is National Bird Day for all the bird lovers out there and everyone else.
And it's worth pointing out that mm-hmm. you, Rob, said yum when I told you it was National Bird Day.
I don't recall that.
So now we're going to help you appreciate birds from a different angle, not mm-hmm. on your dinner platter angle. So I've put together a little bird quiz to celebrate National Bird Day. And you can play along if you're listening now. Okay, so the first bird, Michelle.
So these are bird calls.
Bird calls.
We're gonna get.
Oh, these are bird calls.
So I should point out to everyone that I'm very bad at identifying things that are part of a category
of
stalling. Things.
All right, the first bird call.
I'm going to go with bird. Yes,
now,
true. It is a bird.
I have to. This is the easiest one. Very
I think
common.
Could it be a red-winged blackbird?
Yes,
bird?
Yes, it is.
Don't look at the screen where Cheryl Gasser is able to type things
no.
to us.
Oh, you guys are cheating. All right, no cheating this time.
Okay,
next
red
one.
And blackbird. So I can going. Identify those by sight.
All
though.
Right, stop stalling. Next one.
I've heard that
and
one before.
Not even
Wisconsin.
Cheryl Gasser can help
okay,
you
okay, I won't
on this
look
one.
At the screen this time.
Or maybe she can.
I'm going to grackle.
Is not a grackle. That would be the white-throated sparrow noted
okay,
for our
obviously.
Old man, old Sam Peabody call. Now
okay.
you've learned. And quickly, the last one.
Some kind of owl.
That would be the barn owl.
Barn owl.
And you've learned. You're listening to Central Time on
I
the
win.
Ideas Network.